walk us through a little bit. Please, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation to speak to you today, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Ken Strobeck, representative from District 6 and Chair of the House Revenue Committee. We spent a great deal of time with House Bill 2082 and putting together the essential components of the bill that you have before you after it went through the House Transportation Committee, and Chairman Montgomery and his committee did a lot of work on it as well. What I've been asked to talk about today is primarily the reason behind where we came up with the figures we did in the gas tax and the thinking behind the provision of authorizing $600 million in bonds for projects. And to do that, I guess I'll have to go back a session or two and remind the committee that in the 95-97 session, there was a great deal of discussion about the deteriorating quality of the highway system in Oregon, particularly as illustrated by the increasing number of vehicle miles traveled in all sections of the state, but especially the urbanized areas, and the decline in the real buying power of the state gas tax when compared to what the costs are of actually putting on new overlays and replacing deteriorating pavement. What we have heard was that the state of Oregon has some very strong limitations because of our constitutional limit on the gas tax provision that it must go to actually fund the highways, but also our very low vehicle registration fees compared to other neighboring states, the fact that we don't charge property tax or personal property tax on the purchase of vehicles, and that we don't have a sales tax, a state sales tax that generates money from the sale of gasoline or automobiles. So when you look at all the total amounts of money that we as a residents of Oregon put into the highway system and where that comes from, it shows a declining line if you look at it in terms of the dollars coming in and the need that actually exists on the highways. That message was especially brought home to us in the committee when we heard from the local governments and saw the charts that related to city and county road systems and how that they are falling even further behind in their maintenance, preservation, and modernization efforts because of the fact that they don't get the benefit of very much federal money, and they are also having a large amount of growth, especially where those communities have a lot of traffic going through their areas, but not a whole lot of tax base locally, and a lot of citizens that share in the gas tax revenue when it's distributed from the state. Combined with that are the fact that we have huge projects that are needed, and the one that is most visible in my part of the state is the I-5 and 217 project, which year after year after year would get listed as a very high priority, and yet would always fall off the list for projects to be funded because there was not enough total dollars in the modernization category to fund that project unless you decided to zero out basically every other project in the state. That's where the idea of creating some bonding to really address some of this backlog of project needs came up. What we did was ask the folks from ODOT to bring us the highway plan and take a look at the B list. As you know, the B list are those projects that are considered important but are not funded as the A list is, which is adopted into the STIP. And we took a look at those by region, and a letter May 14th was the famous list that we talked about, where Director Krunikin, after going back and checking with the members of the OTC and doing a little bit of local chatting about this, came back and gave me a list of the projects that were needed for additional modernization needs that were unfunded from the B list as it currently existed. The total of those projects was about $724,700,000 statewide for each of the five regions. In looking at the available potential revenues, we decided to take a look at the originally the 6 cents package, and using 2 cents of that 6 cents as debt service for some bonds that would be issued for a particular period of time, and see how much money those would generate. We ended up landing on a 20-year payback schedule, and using the amount of revenue generated with the 2 cents, that comes out to about $600 million. And so we settled on that number as being a very healthy number. In fact, it would be the largest single infusion of road building dollars in the history of the state of Oregon for this bill to finally go through and be passed and signed into law. That would provide about $600 million addressing this $600 million of the $725 million in the total statewide needs that were unfunded on the B list. We then got into some discussions about how the B list would get incorporated into the STIP, because the way the transportation infrastructure works in Oregon, it goes from the highway plan into the STIP. It's adopted into the STIP by the process of going out to local governments, to local or regional transportation advisory groups, and reassessing whether the priorities that were identified in the highway fund are still the priorities currently. And that's where we get the little bit of variation, and the one that's the most obvious in this particular list is in Region 2, talking about the Pacific Highway I-5 Woodburn Interchange Reconstruction, which has moved up quite significantly on the list from where it was a year or two ago due to the construction of the outlet malls that will soon be opening. In fact, the sign says they'll be opening this month. And I imagine that come Christmas time that interchange will be one of the most problematic in the state.
Impossible.
So that's the process that ODOT said they needed to go through by going back to the Highway Commission, the Transportation Commission, and to the local and regional advisory groups on transportation, and come back and let us know if there are any other changes in this priority list for each of the five regions if projects move up or move down. One of the things that we had very strong agreement on was that the list would not come back completely rewritten. It would not be a different list when it came back. But in fact, the list that will be presented now as your bill has been amended, as it would be presented to the Joint Transportation Committee in the interim and then forwarded to the E-Board, that this list will be essentially the same, but there might be a little bit of movement, line or two up or down, based on the input that the that ODOT receives once they run this system back through the local transportation input process. The hammer that we have for this is, first of all, our agreement and our level of trust with Director Krenikin, with the governor's office, and his representative who was present when we developed this plan, but also the fact that the emergency board has the complete authority to either issue or not issue or authorize the bonds to be issued based upon their acceptance of the project in the list. And that's where the additional steps that this committee has decided to add in comes in even more important, with the Joint Transportation Committee making a recommendation to the E-Board. The E-Board will then have the prerogative to either accept the list and issue the bonds, or authorize the issuance of the bonds, or completely reject the issuance of the bonds.
Mm-hmm.
We also, at that point, because of the original need that I spoke about relating to local government, cities and counties especially, suggested that in the first couple of years that the remaining balance of the gas tax increase should be split primarily to cities and counties, and then after 2 years it would go into a 50-30-20 split, including the state. That, as you know, has been changed a little bit because of the reduction in the gas tax from 6 cents to 5 cents, and the use of one of the $10 of the $10 registration fee increase statewide as the other portion of debt service. So therefore, the split is a little bit less to the state overall when you take a look at the entire package, and still very strong for cities and counties because of their indication and the testimony that we got about the condition of the roads that they're responsible for. We also decided to begin the first step of the new gas tax in October. That's not possible now because of the 90-day effective date following close of session. We've now passed July 1st, but we recommend that be implemented in November 1st on a 2-cent basis, with all of that money going to ODOT for their maintenance and preservation shortfall, and then once the first of the year comes, then the additional 4 cents would have gone in, now 3 cents, and then that would go to the regular 50-30-20 split. We We felt that it was a very responsible response to the statewide need, and especially when you look at the projects that could never be funded with the available modernization dollars, to have this kind of an infusion of capital money going into major road projects, we felt was a very responsible response to the fact that we hadn't done those kind of maintenance and modernization projects over a period of years. And we have had an enormous increase in population. I forgot what exactly, but I'm sure you've had testimony about the increase in the number of vehicle miles traveled, a staggering percentage increase, and in our most of the state, there's been virtually no increase in capacity. But we see the increase in congestion in all areas of the state, particularly the urbanized areas, but up and down the entire Willamette Valley, Southern Oregon, Central Oregon. Redmond is one of the most striking stories that we saw, and I'm sure you've seen that testimony as well. Anyway, those are the essential elements that went into our thinking and our background when we came up with the gas tax portion. Of course, that also has a proportional increase in what was then the weight mile tax in the original House Bill 2082, and we also considered the a diesel tax separately in House Bill 3344. That ultimately did not get passed out of the Revenue Committee, but the elements I know that were part of that bill have been incorporated into 2082, and that bill has been made even, or that portion of the policy has been made even stronger with the inclusion of a constitutional amendment that would require maintenance of cost responsibility between heavy vehicle classes and light vehicles. So, speaking as the chair of the Revenue Committee, I've been very involved in helping discussions as this bill has progressed, and I'm very supportive of the bill. In some ways, I still wish it was 6 cents. That would have solved a lot of the distribution problems. But I think, frankly, 5 cents is a more marketable number for people to take. A nickel for the highway sounds like a very reasonable step to take, considering the vast increase in the number of cars that we've had in the state. And while it very well may be referred by some groups, I still think that when most people take a look at the wild variations in gas prices that they see at the pump, and recognizing that all of that is going to the oil companies and not really helping the maintenance of the roads, I think when they see a nickel increase, that really will make a substantial difference. And especially when we talk about the impact of these projects across the entire state, I believe that it will be well received and that people will feel that it's a reasonable response to the need that's presented. So, with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Wait, no, I had another question. Excuse me. I would like you to comment on, because I know we've worked on several formulas for the distributions of cities and counties, and are you supportive of the latest? And I also would like you to comment on, are you comfortable that going to a diesel tax, that we can maintain revenue neutrality and meet the goals that were set out at the beginning of the session?
Yes, Madam Chair. As I indicated, I think it would have been simpler for the distribution had we stayed at the 6 cents, but recognizing that just was not going to be a political possibility, I am comfortable with the distribution as currently suggested. With the following additional caution that ODOT, I think, has presented some fairly compelling evidence that their 1 cent out of the remaining distribution is not quite enough to meet their maintenance and preservation needs, but the additional money generated by the $10 registration portion that's over and above the amount necessary to do debt service, combined with the money that they're getting from the T21 federal government and other sources, helps to make up that difference, and therefore does, over the course of the length of this bill, provide enough money for ODOT's modernization and maintenance and preservation needs, not the modernization. The modernization is really taken care of in the 2 cents bonding piece. So, yes, I feel that the distribution is good as long as we are able to make sure that additional maintenance component is addressed for the benefit of ODOT. I think the cities and counties are doing very well with this. But, you know, it's also important, I think, to recognize that none of these systems operate completely independently. You don't have a state system that never intersects with a city system or a county system. In many cases, the main street through a town is the state highway, or where there are major traffic congestion points, that is the intersection of a state road and a county road. And so all these things are very much intertwined, and it's a mistake to say that there's a county system, a state system, and a city system, and that they're not very much interdependent on each other. And I think all those entities work together when they're doing transportation planning, as we know, on a regional basis. To get to the other part of your question on the diesel tax, especially with the addition of the constitutional amendment, I'm satisfied that we will be able to maintain the proportionality of heavy vehicles to light vehicles based on a biannual cost allocation study. And I think it's a very wise move to go ahead and include that in the Constitution and make it very clear that the rates are to be adjusted. And that doesn't necessarily mean that the rates are to be increased. You know, the cost allocation study that we just got recently indicated that some classes of trucks were paying more than their share and others were underpaying their share. So whatever the results of the cost allocation study would be on a biennial basis, I think it's very important to maintain that cost responsibility between heavy vehicles and light vehicles as a class. Of course, you will get away from within the weight mile system is a further subdivision of different weights and different categories of vehicles within the heavy vehicle broad category. And, you know, I recognize that that's a change, but I think it's one that I'm willing to accept in order to simplify the burden of paperwork and reporting and all that for the truckers, especially for interstate truckers who have to keep a huge different set of books. We had testimony that I thought was very compelling in the House Revenue Committee, not just from interstate, but also from in-state trucking people. One very small family-owned trucking operation from Albany, Lebanon area that only ran two or three trucks and recognized that their registration would go up substantially under a diesel tax, but they said, please pass the diesel tax so we don't have to have this mountain of paperwork for the weight mile. So I think there is generally support for that concept among the trucking community. I know that we've had many, many amendments to try to address various divisions within that, the people who are driving lower miles, the under 30,000 miles, and other classes, the concrete and the utilities and so forth. So I think those have all been addressed, and I'm optimistic that this will be a very successful system.
Great.
A couple of questions, Ken. One, just looking at the list, the distribution between highway region, was that roughly the proportions that are used in distribution of funds now? Is that a population base? I can't recall how it's done.
Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, I believe that is. I did not ask ODOT to do anything differently with the development of the list by region than they normally do in the construction of the highway plan. Since this was adopted from the B list, which is part of the highway plan, I believe you can see the differences by region that is reflective of the population distribution.
Okay. Second thing is that my thought as I was reading this and I've talked to you on this is that you were really looking at getting $600 million worth of projects done and bonding with a method. Now, this one ties pretty tightly to bonding, but I wonder, as we've talked about this in cash flow, we may want to adjust that to be more specific and say we're looking at the list for $600 million worth of projects, authorize the bonding, but to give more cash management flexibility. It's conceivable to me that they may not want to bond for all of it. They may be able to just, depends on the cash flow, just cash some of it.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, you're right in characterizing my interest in the bill as achieving $600 million in new projects, new major generally high-cost, high-volume projects that would not be possible to be done without this kind of an infusion. If it works out better for the cash flow to do some of that on a cash basis rather than a bond basis, I'm not committed to making every penny be bonded, yeah, but that we end up with the result of $600 million in projects.
Do you have anything to
add? I did have a question. Thank you. I appreciate all the work you've done on this package. I know it was a lot of work to put all of this together. It's a very complicated bill. I have a question about the amount of money that would be available for maintenance and preservation, because it's my understanding that in the recently adopted Oregon Highway Plan, as it went through the public hearing process, the public said that they, if we had to prioritize how we spent our money in transportation, that they'd rather that we took care of the roads we now have and take care of the investment that we already have on maintenance and transportation, and then address modernization needs, if that's at all possible. And I see this package in doing more in the area of modernization than it does for maintenance and preservation, and I'm just wondering if we're staying true to what the public really wants us to do after we went through the public hearing process, and why there was a decision to go this route rather than trying to take care of what we already have, which we know we're doing a very bad job of now, and losing out so much money on the investment we've already made in our roads throughout around the state. But I have a concern about us, you know, going down that other approach. And I just was wondering why, as you worked on putting this together with a lot of other people, why there was a decision to do that.
Madam Chair, Senator Castillo, what we tried to do was to have it both ways. We felt like when we looked at the needs analysis from the cities and counties and the state and the maintenance and preservation component, that's what we took into account first. As you're saying, how can we make sure that we get the roads back up to the acceptable percentage of fair or better or good or better that we want, rather than have a decline? And so the package as constructed does that, meets that, and turns that decline back around so that there is a higher percentage that are in the good to excellent category rather than continuing to have them slide. But we also recognize that part of the reason that many of our highway miles are getting into a declining position is because they're overused and they're too heavily traveled for what they were originally designed for. So adding some key projects, some key capacity, really helps lessen the impact on the already existing road system that you have, and further reduces the need for greater maintenance and preservation efforts on beyond that, when those are even further overused.
Mm-hmm.
So we were very conscious of the split between modernization, and we recognize that both the governor and as well as others, as you mentioned, have made that a very high priority. That's why we worked very closely with the governor's office to make sure that we did strike a balance between increasing the funds available for maintenance and preservation while also adding in essential modernization projects that will take care of the capacity issues and actually lessen the impact on the existing roads.
Okay. Madam Chair, can I follow up? Well, we're going to get $600 million for the modernization. Do you know how much this nets, the actual amount then that we will be spending for maintenance and preservation? Do you know how much that we net from that this package, and what, you know, how it compares to $600 million? Oh.
The numbers are changing a little bit, and I think Dick Yates could probably answer them better than I, but roughly the cash flow on it over the six-year period is about $100 million a year, of which about half, a little less than half of that, will go to servicing the debt service for the $600 million. The rest of it, it goes into maintenance and operation on the state, local, and county systems. So more than half of it actually is going out under the roads. Just that new project, that's more, the $600 million is a bonded number, but the cash flow in terms of cash coming through is a little less than half of the funding. And that's the new stuff. That doesn't include that most of the existing money goes to maintain the system that's there now. This is the added on.
And, Madam Chair, the reason that the bonding, again, why we thought the bonding was so essential is because so many of these projects have such huge price tags. And the average amount that ODOT has on an annual basis for modernization of the A list, which is the projects that have eventually risen to the top of the heap, is around $54 million. Well, that's for the whole state on an annual basis. And so to do $600 million really helped us catch up for a lot of things that would be on the list for decades before you'd ever get around to funding them. As I was mentioning, the I-5-217 interchange, for example, the cost of that, you know, between $40 and $50 million, would take all of the money for all of the modernization for the entire state for a whole year just to do one project. And it's because those things are very large and very expensive that they're so consuming of dollars. we would not be able to do the volume of these improvements without bonding. But as Senator Beyer has said, the balance is for our maintenance and preservation, and the exact numbers Dick can give you, but it's an approximation that about a penny produces about $25 million. So you can take a look at however many pennies are going on an annual basis to maintenance and preservation, and each penny can generate about $25 million for those purposes.
I'd like to add to that. Now, ODOT collects 24 cents.
Mm-hmm.
4 cents a year goes to modernization. The whole 20 cents goes to run the agency and maintenance and preservation.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not, right now, a very much of what they have to spend is committed to modernization.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the great need.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, besides the money from T21 that's coming project specific, that's another $50 million
mm-hmm.
plus, which is equal to 2 cents that they can spend on maintenance and preservation. So the little nickel, you know, that's going to the cities and the counties in modernization isn't even half of what they, you know, for just modernization, for just maintenance and preservation.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at all the figures together, it's hard to think it's unfair what we're doing. In my opinion.
Okay.
May I have another
question? Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering about the decision to do the bonding and what discussions took place about going into debt to do this and the why, how much more this costs us to do it this route what came out of those discussions or as you were looking at whether or not to go into debt to do this?
Madam Chair, Senator Castillo, again, it's as I responded to your last question, is that just the sheer volume of the projects that have been put off and delayed and deferred for so many years is so huge that there's no way that we can actually save up that amount of money and then actually go out and do that without having another 20 years elapse, and who knows then where we would be even further behind in the total amount of needed projects. So we saw this as a way to jumpstart the projects, and we saw the 2 cents of the gas tax, which now is 1 cent and the $10 registration fee, as dedicated debt service to pay for that. So, yes, there is a cost, as there always is, whenever you do a bonding project, there is an additional cost to do it. But compared to the alternative, waiting for 20 years to be able to do things like the improvements in the Corvallis to Newport Highway on US 20, a $60 million project where the turning lanes are so tight there that trucks have to go hundreds of miles around. They can't even make the turns where there are accidents all the time. These are the kinds of things that could never be funded by just saving up the annual amount available for modernization.
Yeah.
So we felt like it was a fair trade-off to do that, recognizing that, yes, we'll be paying this off over a longer period of time, but in part it's because of our failure to have done those kinds of things because we don't have the cash with a large registration fee or a big sales tax or some other way to do those kinds of projects.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes,
thank you. This one strikes me a little bit in terms of buying new infrastructure. It's a little bit analogous to a newly married couple buying a house and mortgaging it, as opposed to if they waited until the time when they had a couple hundred thousand dollars to buy it, they probably wouldn't need it.
Okay. Thanks. Paul Warner, why don't you come up next? That's great. Well, thank you for coming. And I know you put a lot of time into building this. And the bonding, actually, didn't it first start with Representative Mike Lehman? That's where I first heard it.
As I said, this came through House Transportation. I want to give them a lot of credit for helping to start the thinking behind this bill as well. And
well, he's first in debt.
They had to send it to revenue.
Right. Yes. He's going to come up.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ken.
Now, will you raise our comfort level on this? tell us what you think about it all.
Hi, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Officer, and with me is Dick Yates, who has done the analytical work on using the cost allocation model and looking at the revenue impacts and distribution impacts of HB 2082C. As you recall, Madam Chair, he really gave the two charges after House Bill 2082 had come to the Senate. And those were, first of all, to modify it in terms of a 5-cent increase instead of a 6-cent, and then to find a structure that achieves revenue neutrality. By that, we set up what was really a hypothetical, what 2082 would have generated with a 5-cent gas tax. And so we developed a set of registration fees and diesel tax rates that would generate the same amount of revenue, and that's the revenue neutrality assumption. The other charge was to make that system cost responsible between heavy and light vehicles. There was not an effort to make that cost responsible within weight classes, but rather between the two large classes. So that was the second element to it. Another key issue here that's related is the distribution piece, and more of an expenditure issue, but the way that the dollars are distributed among the different units of government does affect cost responsibility, primarily because local governments, heavy vehicles use those county and city roads less than they do state highways, so it does affect the numbers when there's shifts in distribution. Essentially, our method was to use the new cost allocation model, which we got in full in April, and so we do feel like that has the best data available and really uses the most advanced techniques, relying heavily on the recent Federal Highway Study. The revenue estimates, we have generated revenue estimates, both a total and by level of government, to match the distribution plans as we understand them. We've compared and modified those results with compared those results with the modified House Bill 2082, the House version with a 5-cent. We'll show you a diesel tax rate and registration fee schedules that we think will give you revenue neutrality over the next 6 years, both in terms of the short run and longer term. One final point, and then I'd like to turn it over to Dick to go through the details with you. These are estimates, and of course the operating procedure for my office is to develop all estimates in an unbiased, objective way. That's not to say there's not considerable uncertainty. Whenever you have a fundamental change in your tax system, there will be uncertainty, and this, of course, is no exception. So we do emphasize that these results are midpoint objective estimates, yet there is some uncertainty when you make a change of this magnitude. What you should have, Madam Chair, before you is an outline of the key elements of the bill that affect revenue, the distribution of that bill, and then the estimated revenue by fiscal year, and then cost allocation among the different wage classes and how that would stack up on a detailed basis using the new cost allocation model. So if I may, Madam Chair, I'll ask Dick to go through some of the details with you.
Okay, thanks.
Dick Yates with the Legislative Revenue Office. First, quickly, let's go over the one page. And that's sort of a quick summary of what the bill does, as well as sort of how we went about doing our estimates. And what you see at the top are the tax rate and fee changes, so that on November 1 of 99, you get a 2-cent increase in the gasoline tax, which takes us to 26 cents. January 1 of 2000, the gasoline and used fuel tax was increased by another 3 cents to take us to a total of 29. And on that same day, January 1, passenger car registration fees increased by $10 per biennium, and that's from the current $30 to $40 per biennium. In calendar year, or in January 1 again of 2000, registration fees get a portion. Emphasize this at this point because you see a lumpiness in the income stream that comes in. Part of that is because registration fees are paid on a calendar year basis and they have to be paid by January 1 of the calendar year. During that first year, you implement the new higher registration fees in the middle of the year. So people registering for calendar year 2000 will essentially pay for 6 months of current fees and 6 months of the higher fees. And that money comes in early then because it has to be paid in January, and you see that lumpiness in the income stream in the fiscal year 99-2000. We also adjust the weight mile tax rates. They will be in effect from January 1st through June 30th of 2000. Those are adjusted to sort of achieve the heavy vehicle share of 36.2% during that period. Paul mentioned the highway cost allocation study, which was just completed, and they did make several recommendations, which were incorporated into the D&Book version as it came out of the House. One of those recommendations was to change sort of the registration fees for heavy vehicles between $8,000 and $26,000. Those are incorporated into this analysis. The rest of the recommendations are not, given primarily that the weight mile tax has a six-month life expectancy. And so in July 1 of 2000, then you do repeal the weight mile tax. And at that same time, you implement a diesel fuel tax at the rack at the rate of 29 cents. And also the new heavy vehicle registration fees take effect at that time.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Dick, what's the rate, diesel rate in Washington, California?
Washington and California, it's below 29 cents. I can get that information for you. I don't have a...
Is it within a penny or two of this?
What? 26 for California. I think, I don't know what...
It's 27, I think.
In California or in Washington? I thought California just raised it, but I don't know. Okay.
I can get it.
Is that close enough that it's not, economically, it's not going to cause people to fuel in one state versus another?
Where they fuel is supposed to be irrelevant if there aren't. Because they have to the what miles they run in Oregon, and the tax they pay is based on miles they run in Oregon, not where they buy the fuel.
With NHTSA, the federal? Yes, I mean. And Arizona was the last state that got rid of their weight mile next to diesel, and that was their big concern. And that didn't happen.
Oh, but they were lower than the adjoining states.
No, they weren't. No, that was a big worry that it was going to be more, that the trucks would fuel up in New Mexico and go clear to California. It didn't happen.
How about the implementation cycle? Is this technically and practically feasible to make the break in the middle of the year, given where we're at now, particularly if this thing gets referred?
Council is struggling with that question. What happens if it's referred, because a number of sections in the bill are repealed a number of times. And if you're repealing one that never took effect because it was referred, you got a problem. But we're working on that problem.
How about just how about just being able to get the registration and in the traffic?
As far as implementing
it, I just wanted to respond, because Joan was just, Robinson said that drafting has already been written, and
conceive.
Why don't you come up here too, John? That'd be great.
John Robinson, Legislative Council. As I understand it, the decision has been made to draft something that says that if the bill is referred, it will be phased in the same sequence that it would be phased in if it weren't referred, but the dates will all change. So it'll still be a phased in, which is by far the easiest way to draft. And as you probably know, the decision has been made to draft a bill, a new bill, that says that if it's referred by the people, it would be referred to the May primary election. So the implementation, if it's referred and passed by the people, would begin July 1st with 2 cents, and then 2 months after that, 3 cents, and 6 months after that, the repeal of the late mile and so on.
So what does that do in terms of cash flow?
Deferred everything.
If the bill is revenue neutral, it should, I guess, you'd actually get more money, because if you don't do anything else, what continues during the interim while this is postponed is the existing late mile pass. That would get you, you would get more money than the question should have asked me ahead of time.
You came to mind, Dan. Sorry.
You've got lots of things going on here at once. If we take current law as it is and don't try to adjust it to the highway cost allocation study, i.e. reduce the heavy vehicle share, if you made no adjustments in that way, you've got a revenue stream coming in. Now, that's lower than would be under this bill where you've got a 5-cent gasoline tax and a $10 registration fee increase. Okay, so you would be generating less money than this bill is. But still more money than you would be if you, you know, adjusted current law to reflect the reduction in park responsibility.
Say it one more time.
Well, the reduction in truck responsibility is going to happen no matter what we do.
No, it's not true. You've got to pass legislation to do it.
What?
That's not true.
I thought that the new cost responsibility study showed that they've been overpaying.
It makes recommendations. You may take or leave those recommendations, and nothing changes unless you change the law.
Well, we would recommend. That's why we have the study.
Well, yeah, but we still have to pass the law to do it. The current rates are in statute, and it takes a legal action to do it.
Well, I know, but there's no sense having the study if you're not going to adjust it.
I think the question before us, Madam Chair, is...
Okay. Yeah.
If we pass this bill out and we think we've solved the problem and it gets referred, then there's a period of time before this would take effect. If the effect is delayed, and during that interim period, what happens to revenue? I think that's the question.
Yeah, I've just been told that, because I'm been in committees, that we've drafted a bill that would take care of that. It would address that. Right? Okay.
To continue then, I guess I need to take just a brief moment and talk about how the money is distributed under this bill compared to how it's distributed.
Before you jump off, I want to be real clear. Now, referrals aside, given where we're at and the IFTA agreement, is it possible? We've got some projections in here, assuming that you could get the registration in place. And I guess there's no question that you could with the in-state. But how about the out-of-state?
Yes.
Are we over-projecting what we might be able to get?
We have a substantial amount of money at risk, I would say. The requirements under IFTA is that you notify them 6 months ahead of time. If you notify them 6 months ahead of time, you're pretty much guaranteed the other states will implement your changes in registration fee. Now, 6 months ahead of time for the change in the registration fee, which would require a splitting of that first year between current and the increased fee, to pass on June 30th. So you're sort of in a position where if the surrounding states choose to implement the change and collect the money for us, it'll come in. But there's nothing that forces them, they're not legally required to do so, there's nothing that forces them to do that because we've missed the 6 month notification period. So there is a substantial amount of money there, I haven't tried to estimate that exactly, but guessing I'm it's around $50 million, which might very well be at risk.
How much?
$50
million. So we may be $50 million overstated in our revenue?
That's worth the first scenario, yeah.
Okay.
On that first, I mean, you're assuming My estimate shows $65 million when we get into them of registration fee revenues in that first year. Most of that is based on the second half of the year where the registration fees are 10 times as high.
Didn't you say they needed 6 months' notice?
Yes.
Well, why if you give notice in September, the bill, or whenever, why is that a problem? And every other state's been able to switch and do the math and are, you know, staying even. What makes it so difficult that we can't figure it out?
Well, it's not a question of us figuring it out, I'm not sure. It's a question of the fact that registration fees are paid on a calendar year basis. So 6 months' notice means by July 1. The fact that you don't implement them until a year from that, in the middle of the year, is irrelevant because they are imposed on a calendar year basis. And the notice has to be 6 months before the beginning of the calendar year, and we've missed it before January 1 of 2000.
But Madam Chair, there's a memo produced by the Motor Carrier Division Manager, Greg Del Ponte, referring to this issue. And, of course, they're the ones who have to do the administration sign. We get you a copy of that so you can see what their concerns are from an implementation standpoint. But basically, it's just to give the 6 months lead time so that those fees at the beginning of the calendar year can be guaranteed they'll be collected.
But it's not insurmountable.
Well, it's not insurmountable. It's a certainty issue. Whether, as Dick's pointing out, we basically have to rely on the good nature of our neighbors that they will collect those registration fees. The way the system is set up is that 6 months guarantees that they will handle that, and we've missed that window. So we don't have a real good sense of what the risks are associated with that, and that's probably a good issue to have Del Ponte address the committee, or we can try to find out further from him what his sense is in terms of what the risks
are. I'd like to, because I haven't talked to him for a long time, but the last time he was before our committee, he didn't have these, you know, he just said, if you guys tell us, we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't think they're concerned about implementing. It's just if they get the appropriate lead time in order to do that. So we will go ahead and check further with him and come back with you with some further information.
Right, and I'll call California and Washington, too. Because I don't want to do something that's going to hurt our funding stream. So we'll get some kind of an agreement.
And then, of course, the other option, Madam Chair, is in terms of your timing on implementation. So that becomes one of your policy choices.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
It seems like one option might be just to push it back a year and line it all up on January 1st of 2001. That just would... And you wouldn't have any notification questions. No one, if we've got this balance, no one would end up paying any more money than they would under the new system, would they? You would just continue the current system for a year and then make a switch.
If you, Senator Byer, if you implemented the fee and growth version with a 5-cent tax rather than a 6-cent tax increase, so that you do sort of adopt it to the recommendations of the cost allocation study and ran that for 1 year rather than 6 months, and then implemented the rest of the changes in terms of the diesel fuel tax and the registration, higher registration fees on January 1, 2001, yeah, you should basically have the same revenue.
I mean, the idea is that when we're switching is that people won't pay any more or any less. They'll just pay it in a different manner.
That's right.
So if you just took the known system and ran it for a year and then made a clean switch, it wouldn't advantage or hurt anybody. You just have more certainty over your revenue stream.
I think in both cases, the basic vehicle class and the heavy vehicle class would pay the same amount. Within the heavy vehicle class, of course, there will be some differences in terms of your paying taxes. At least what type of vehicle you're coming from.
That's no different than it is now.
That's true.
And they've agreed to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they what?
Have agreed to it.
Okay.
Right. I mean, it's not even we're shoving down their throat.
Well, I guess you could ask that, but that strikes me as a reasonable thing to at least consider.
Because every other problem that you've put up to kind of be a barrier, we found a way to solve it. So this is just new. I hadn't heard this one before. Well, I'm optimistic.
Well, I'm sure that was my concern after reading it. Reading Del Ponte's memo and the others, just in terms of that, the uncertainty raised out in there, and it was just a question that I had raised with Paul in terms of what happens, because his memo was written back in April, I believe, says if you do it by June 1st, there's only this risk, and I just was kind of wondering, it just kind of pushes it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That's not intended in any way to be a criticism of change, it's just what I'm saying, if you're going to do
a timing issue,
you know.
Right. And I'd like to hear what the others have to say, too. It's not the first barrier we've reached.
I don't think that's a barrier.
You don't? Okay.
Going in the same place.
Okay. Go ahead.
We will follow up with Greg Del Ponte on chair.
Okay.
More information for
you. Coming back then to the sheet that I'm going through, if you look at the B growth version of 2082 that came out of the House, the distribution formulas are based on a penny goes here, a penny goes there, and currently goes somewhere else. When you move away from the existing tax structure, it's no longer possible to really calculate what current law would be.
Hmm.
For example, as you move, say, into 2002, to calculate current law, you'd have to multiply 24 cents by the number of gallons of motor vehicle fuel that's sold, and by the number of gallons of diesel fuel that's consumed by vehicles under 26,000 pounds. That data will not be available. And so there's really no way to get at current law. So what I've tried to do in designing these distribution formulas is to approximate the same sort of distribution that existed under the Dean Gross version. So, dealing with, first of all, the 2 cents that is passed for November and December of 99, up through the end of 99, everything that's collected except that 2 cents is distributed as it's distributed under current law. 60% goes to the state, 24 to the counties, and 16 to the city. The 2 cents additional during those 2 months, all goes to the state. Then you hit January 1, 2000. And the money that comes in after that, we're just taking 82% off the top, 82.2342%, and that is distributed according to the current law distribution formula, right? 60% to the states, 24 to the counties, and 16 to the city. And I'm calling that current law. Maybe I should find another term. But what I'm trying to approximate there is the concept of current law, which takes basically, and we'll go through that calculation a little bit, but it takes and computes what basic law would be on, what current law would be on basic vehicles. And then it computes the required heavy vehicle payment to match that. And so the combination of what basic vehicles pay under current law plus the matching heavy vehicle revenue is what I'm calling current law. Because there is no more current law. You can't compute it under this tax structure. A different tax structure. So what we do is to really identify four different pots here, or four different amounts of money that should be distributed differently. The first one, as I indicated, is current law, and that's most of the pot. It's 82%.
Yeah, just a second. Are you still on this sheet?
Still on the first sheet.
All right. Okay.
Then 8.2%, essentially, all goes to local governments, and that's aimed at matching 3 cents of new fuel tax. And from that pot, we fund two special new funds, the Eastern Oregon County amount and the amount for the Coastal Oregon County. That's $3 million each. You also add $1 million into the existing special city allocation and $750,000 into the special county allocation. The balance of that money, none of it goes to the state. All goes to local government, 60% to the counties, 40% to the city. The next pot there is for state bonding. It's about 6.5%. It's aimed at being equivalent to 1 cent of new fuel money plus the $10 basic registration money. And that all goes to the state for debt service on bonds. The last one is 3.1%, which is aimed at being 1 cent. And that's all to the state for modernization, maintenance, and preservation. Now, I'll reemphasize the point that Paul made earlier, and that is depending upon what these percentages are, the heavy vehicle share changes. The more money that's going to local governments, the lower is the required heavy vehicle match. All right, because basically their share is less because they use the roads less. Okay, then just real quickly, what we did in terms of trying to adjust fees and taxes so as to achieve revenue neutrality, we started with a model which basically is the version that was in the House of 3344, which has a fixed, which changes the registration fees on heavy vehicles from one fee to a combination of a fixed and a variable fee. The fixed fee remains fixed and doesn't change. The variable fee is initially set at almost 10 times the existing total fee. For example, an 80,000-pound truck under current law pays $320 in registration fees, so the variable fee would be 9.85 times that, or almost, you know, like $3,100. Then there are additional fees. Some types of vehicles don't have to pay the variable fee or don't have to pay all of the variable fees. So for cement, log, sand, and gravel trucks, they pay the fixed fee plus, and initially the amount is set at $950, and that again varies depending on what we do here to try to achieve revenue neutrality. The same is true for refuse or garbage truck. And then there are a number of vehicles there that pay only the fixed fee.
Madam Chair, next question here.
Sure.
What was the rationale for doing that and not having them all? Are these people who currently are under the weight mile system now? Are these trucks? The cement log and
all of these vehicles would currently be under the weight mileage. Yes.
And so what was the rationale for them?
Just a minute.
Having
the log trucks can choose to do flat fee.
You're correct.
Right. And a lot of these have a certain break now, like the utility vehicles. And
well, the sand and gravel trucks and chips are also flat fees, but on average, the flat fee is supposed to be set so they pay the same amount as if they were under the weight mile.
On average, but a log trucker told me he can go clear to Washington and haul logs on the flat fee, and our bill is not designed to help cheaters. So,
but does this, under the fees in lieu of variable fees, does this mean they get a lower rate, or are they paying the same rate? Or I don't understand what this means in terms of, if they're under the current weight mile, why were these folks singled out? And then also the list of folks who were under the exceptions, I was wondering, these are probably all people who are currently under weight mile as well. And so does this mean that they, will they be paying less, or is this just a different that nets the same amount they would pay under weight mile, or not clear on what that means?
The objective, I don't think, is to try and equate this total payment to what they would pay under weight miles. But I really think those are questions you should ask the trucking industry
tomorrow,
how they put this together. We have taken basically the framework that's presented and done an analysis on it. This is not our framework.
But do you know how much less in revenue you would get here by having these special exceptions for this group? Do you have a total of the loss of revenue there?
I do. I do not have it available with me right now, but I can certainly get it.
Okay. I'd appreciate seeing that. That'd be great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to comment, just to explain it a little bit, is that this was not intended to hurt our local truckers. And so they chose to put a heavier registration fee on the out-of-state truckers. And so if some of these do get a minor break, it's made up. I don't know that they do, but I know that they increased the registration on that out-of-state. But also, the heavier trucks, remember, use more fuel. So empty trucks don't use as much. So they all will pay the 29 cents fuel tax. They won't get by without fuel tax.
But they will be paying less than they would under weight mile, under a current weight mile. Is that what I heard you say?
If we can proceed through the analysis here when we get to the end of the table, maybe just comment on that.
Okay. Thanks.
Anyway, in terms of our trying to achieve revenue neutrality, what we've been able to do is simply vary that variable fee. Of course, if you increase it, you raise more money from the heavy vehicles. If you decrease it, you raise less. And as I adjust the variable registration fee, those additional, what I call special truck fees, the $950 for sand and gravel trucks, the $450 for garbage trucks, those adjust in proportion. So that's the way the adjustment process works here. Because, as I noted earlier, there's a lumpiness in the revenue stream early.
Yeah.
What we chose to do was to do this in two steps. One applies to the first two calendar years, 2000 and 2001, so that it allows the lower registration fees to absorb that excess payment that comes in the first 2 years. Then when you move out into the next 3 years that we're looking at, calendar years, the registration fees become substantially larger in order to maintain revenue neutrality after you've absorbed that initial bundle of revenue.
But that's not for everybody. It's just
that is for all heavy vehicles. Yeah,
okay.
Paying the registration.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay, if we can move to the 7 or 8 page, we got through one page, handout. What you see on the first page is essentially my estimate of the amount of money that will be available under this bill. And in the extreme upper left-hand corner, you can see the dollars that are going to be paid over this six-year period. So you're starting out with $777 million in 1999-00, and that increases to $864 million by the end of the six-year period. That's the total amount of money that will be raised under this bill. So the first page addresses the question of where does this go? How does it go to the state, the county, and the city, and for what uses is that intended? And just as a little bit of a preview, the next page, which is F1 supplement, because I put it in later because nobody could understand page 1, shows what the current system, i.e. no change at all from current law, what we have right now, just continuing on into the future, would raise and how that would be distributed. The last page then is the difference. So that's what you get for cities, for states, counties, and for each type of use. That's the additional amount of money that will be made available to you by this bill. There really is a circle here, and it's not clear where to break into it to begin an explanation. But page 1, page 2, and page 3 of this handout are all related. And if you look across the top in the first box at the top of the page of page 1, on page 1, it's kind of in the headings, there are headings in a box. Again, those are the names I've given to these revenue sources. But you have the percentages of the revenue that go out in the first pot, which I call current law, 82.2342. And those are the same percentages we're talking about up here. This is how the total money is going to be distributed.
Just a second. Is this the same thing we went through in Dave and Gary's Wilhelm's office?
It's similar. There's been some minor adjustments since that time.
Because it seemed as though part of it, I was in a hurry, but we went through and it didn't apply. And so I was saying, well, why are we going through all this if it doesn't apply?
This applies.
It does.
Beautiful.
Madam Chair, there were three or four options to look at, and so what you did at that meeting was basically eliminate those other options.
Okay, so this is the real stuff.
This is the real stuff.
I didn't want to go through that exercise again.
In the first grouping there at the top of page one, there's a little bit, you know, again, to emphasize what's going on. 82% is going into that first group, and that's distributed, again, 60% to the state, 24% to the county, and 16% to the city. So you see the distribution right below it. The next column over then is the local money.
Oh, okay.
And the $55,897,000 shown at the top is not really 8.12% of the total $777 million. It's less. It's less because you've taken off the top $6 million to go to, or $3 million to go to Eastern Oregon, $3 million to go to the coastal counties, $750,000 which goes to the special county allocation, and $1 million for the special city. All of that comes out of that central column, out of the second column. What's left over then is distributed to the nothing to the state, and 60% to the counties and 40% to the city. Next column over then is state bonding. It all goes to the state. And the last column is state maintenance and preservation money. And that's all available to the state. Again, out of the state, you see some more adjustments over here for the county allocation, and that's related to current law, if you're familiar with that. The state makes a contribution out of its current distribution of $250,000 to the counties and $500,000 to the city. And then the counties also make a contribution to the counties for the special allocation of $500,000, and the cities make an allocation to the special city fund of $500,000. So those all come out of what I call the current law revenue. So they're perfectly comparable with the next page in terms of the money that's coming out for the special county and special city allocation. And the money that's left there is basically just ODOT's March forecast of what revenues will be under current law. And distributed again, 60% to the state, 24% to the county, 16% to the city. Then, cell by cell, for each cell in this table, in the first page, there's a corresponding cell on the second page. You just subtract those cell by cell, and you get what the change is. The first page is how much money you're going to get from the new system. The second page is how much money you would get from the existing system. And the third page is the change.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Get the, I'm on the first page. The, I'm reading this right. The first, well, the first one on the current law, that's the 82% of total funding that will be distributed across the board.
Right.
Right. The second column is the 3 cents that goes to the local governments, and I guess that's less the three columns that's out on the far right.
That's correct.
Okay. And then the bonding, and then maintenance and preservation on state highways. Okay. And then the last three are just the special pots that will go to the counties and
that's
cities.
That's law. And it all comes out of what I call current law.
So does it come out of the 82%?
Yes. In other words, again, if you take that first number, which is $639 million, you make 60% of that, and you'll get a number which is $750,000 higher than the number that appears there. And that's because out of their allocation, out of the state's allocation, I take $250,000 which goes to the counties and $500,000 which goes to the cities.
And you say that existing, but doesn't your second column, the 3 cent column, says less special allocations. Are these the special allocations? So does it come out of, would be added to the $55 million there?
I'm sorry, the heading change in the middle of the page. If you're looking at this, there's a group of special allocations in the first group of rows, okay, which are $6 million, $750,000,
right.
$1 million. Those are all from new money.
Okay. it's not existing law.
And the ones below them, then, for the state, the $250,000 and $500,000,
okay.
For the county, $500,000, and for the city, $500,000, is all existing current law.
Okay. But to be clear, it's not. It's in addition. It's part of the second column. It's part of the second column after the year, the total revenues. But it is distribution. It's not in any of the other columns going across the page.
Right.
Okay. Got it.
Okay. Returning to the first page briefly, where from come these percentages? All right. We start solving this problem by assuming percentages, 82%, 8.18%, 6.5%, and 3.1%. Well, the next page then, which is page 2, and briefly we can go through how that, in fact, generates those percentages. And what I have really at the very top there is a lot of percentages, and as you can see, they're drawn right out of the Highway Cost Allocation Final Report. The ones that are not in bold. And what that's telling us is that if the money is being used on all state systems before any allocation of the subsidy, that the heavy vehicle share is 38.8%. If the money is used on all systems after subsidy, there's our 36.2 that everyone's referring to as the heavy vehicle share. And then if it's used only on state systems before allocation, it's 42%. And if it's used for bonding on state systems, it's or all systems construction before subsidy, 41.8%. And if it's on local systems only, it's 32.9%. So what I've done here is to try to get a, use these numbers to get a consistent after subsidy heavy vehicle share. And that's the bold numbers, and I've computed those. So it's 39.2 if the money is spent for maintenance or preservation on a state system. If it's spent for bonding on the state system, it's 39. And if it's spent on a local system, it's 30.8. And those are the weights that I use against the amount of money that's distributed to the various governments and how it's used by them to determine what the total overall heavy vehicle share is. Not a straightforward process. So the logic of what I want to do then is to identify what basic vehicles it takes. Okay, and then compute how much the heavy vehicles have to pay if they're going to pay their cost responsibility share. So that's what I do in the rest of this table. In the first group of numbers there, that's really just almost like a work area. What I've got is total fuel and registration, basic registration under current law. And again, estimating what the fuel tax would bring in, no matter who pays it, plus the nickel increase, whether it comes from heavy vehicles or light vehicles. And then the $10 registration fee, which is a light vehicle fee, it's a passenger car registration fee. So then the important part of the table is in the middle, under the heading there, paid by basic vehicles. And what I compute is the amount of that current law money that's paid by basic vehicles, which is their what they pay for registration fees, plus 94.67% of the total fuel. Okay, now this is
Are you still on page one? Or what page are you on now?
Two.
Okay.
The fourth page.
I'm sorry. You have pages one, F1, F2, and 2.
Ah, that too. I was wondering. Okay.
You're supposed to get single-sided copies. Sorry.
They all are.
So I'm getting basically under current law $421 million that's paid by basic vehicles. And I get $31 million in the basic vehicles will pay as a result of the 5 cent increase in fuel tax.
Mm-hmm.
And then $6 million that they pay as a result of the $10 registration fee. I started to mention that there's a change here from historic estimating method ODOT has traditionally used 4.8% of total motor vehicle fuel as that portion paid by heavy vehicles. One result that falls out of the highway cost allocation study is that that was too low. The heavy vehicles are paying more than that. And the number that comes out of the study is 5.33. So that's what I'm doing, is reallocating the fuel so that more of it goes to heavy vehicles and less of it goes to motor. Anyway, you've got three columns there of money that's paid by basic vehicles in the middle of that page. The rest of the page is the rest of that row of those rows is devoted to computing how much the heavy vehicles have to pay to maintain their cost responsibility share. So as you move across, as the basic vehicles pay $421 million, and the under current law, the heavy vehicle share is 36.2%. And the number right above there, the 56.76%, what that tells you is that for every dollar the basics pay, the heavy vehicles have to pay 56.7%.
And we know in California, and likewise in California, it's a whole lot more, because don't the trucks down there pay 18%? Up here they pay a lot more. Are you ready? Okay. Okay, I just wanted to kind of ask you, and I need to have Representative Lewis testify, but basically with all of these figures, we look them all over, and when I look at them, it looks like we're going to maintain revenue neutrality, that we're not going to go into the hole.
So that was our target.
And we reached it. Thank you. Now, you did. I want to thank you, and I want to ask you another question, and that says you're absolutely sure that there would be that little gap would be $50 million and not $5
million? It could be nothing.
Okay.
What I said is what potentially is at risk. I'm taking a guess at this point because they have not looked at that. And paying $50 million, because I'm just thinking I'm estimating $65 million for that period. And that's probably a little high, probably in terms of what is at risk. But I'll get back to you with.
I'd like to see what Mr. Del Pony's knows.
Yeah.
Because he works for Ford. Well, thank you.
How long does the cost? Is the revenue neutrality? Last in here. I mean, what is your projection? That you did a projection for how far out?
You need to look at the next page.
Okay.
That's what outlines it. And the bottom line there, it shows what a cumulative difference is. And you generate $50 million more than you need in the first year. And then that's a little bit less in the next 2 years. But by the time you get to the 2003-2005 biennium, you have generating the same amount of dollars you would under our kind of hypothetical 2082B.
Well, it took lots of readjusting of formulas to reach this. So I want to thank you. But I need to have Leslie Lewis come, Representative Lewis, because she has to leave. So if you want to wait, and you can ask more soon.
Okay.
All right. Senator Castillo, Representative Lewis and Roger from Dundee, is he, and that's not Roger.
It's Roger.
Right. Go ahead.
And Chair, committee members, thank you very much. For the record, I'm Lester Lewis. I'm the state representative for District 29, which is a lovely part of the state, Yamhill County, and we have very critical road running right through two towns that would like to have their downtown back for the livability of our communities, and those are Newburgh and Dundee. And I want to express my support for House Bill 2082. The bonding package that's in here, which will provide the very needed funding to get our project off the ground, is just critical to our district. And we want to, we're very, very happy with ODOT that they've included us on the list. In fact, we're the second project on the list in Region 2. We're very pleased with that. And we are a little concerned that it only includes money for the environmental impact study and right-of-way acquisition, but given the direction that the director was given by Representative Strobeck when she put the list together, we understand that they were looking for projects that could be completed within 6 years. Ours probably could not be completed within that time frame, but the EIS and right-of-way acquisition could be completed. We've been working with Director Cunningham, and she's said that once you get a project on the way, if you get through the environmental impact study okay and they acquire the right-of-way, even though that the list doesn't show construction dollars, there still probably will be ways to get construction dollars for this project, and so that's we're real hopeful of that. And I just want to thank the committee for their hard work. I know a lot of people in this building have worked long and hard for months on this passage, and I want to compliment the chair on her efforts. I know she's worked very hard.
Are you supporting the package?
Absolutely.
I go back to the end of session in 95, and I was trying to get you to support Jeff.
And I don't usually support a passing free.
I know.
As everyone in this building knows, but this is a passing free that is vital to my district, and I think it's vital to the state of Oregon. There are good projects all around the state that are funded in this package, as well as the dollars that go out to the cities and counties. So this is a good package.
Yeah. Go ahead. Oh, Senator Bayer.
Curiosity question.
I just look to my left. Okay.
Well, you have to learn.
I am. I am.
I'm curious. I remember this one very well. This is one of our first of two potential toll roads, and this does the EIS and right-of-way acquisition.
That's what's currently in the list. We all realize that the list has to go through the SIP process, and of course we'll be fighting during the SIP process to get a little construction money in there too. But
so do you have any sense of the magnitude of what the construction dollars will be?
The project is in the $80 to $90 million range. Tolling will pay approximately 45 to 50% of it. When I say $80-$90 million, that includes the EIS and the right-of-way. So this $15 million that's on the list is sort of a down payment on that $80 million. But remember, probably 40 of that will come from tolling. So we're looking for overall another $25 million from the state, other than the $15 million that's shown on the list. Approximately. It's a bargain. And frankly, I'm really excited about the tolling. I think it represents a new opportunity for the state of Oregon to have a way to get other kinds of funds for highway projects other than through just simple gas tax and registration fees. And I would encourage the state of Oregon to move this project ahead if for that reason, if for no other.
Okay. Well, thank you. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee.
You're excused.
I'm going to have to answer my own question. I will take a very brief moment to say my name is Dave Hogeberg. I am the chair of the Inyo County Parkway Committee that is in charge of this project in Newburgh-Dundee. But I want to put it in a broader concept, and there hasn't been a lot of testimony about a lot of other specific projects, and you'd probably go nuts if you had 66 people lined up to testify about every project. But we have spent 11 years going through the SIP process trying to find a way to fund a major project, and you can see the result we're here. And this bill is critical to the funding of not only this major project, but I really speak for all the other 65 projects in the state that have the same concerns as we do. And I could talk to you about Senator Duke. I could talk to you about Redmond, 217 Interchange, and on and on and on. And they've all been back and forth out of this SIP project for 11 years, and we're running out of places to put this facility, even if we don't get some funding for it, as are many other projects. So I would tell you on behalf of not just Newburgh-Dundee, but dozens and dozens of critically needed major transportation projects, that this is a bill that will accomplish that, and we're very supportive of it. That's what I wanted to say.
Thank you for spending your afternoon with us.
Thank you very much. We appreciate all your work.
I'm sorry that took so long. Okay. Oh, what about Roger? Well, is he here? Oh, hello. Mm-hmm. Do you live in Dundee?
Yes, Madam Chairman, Senators. I'm a city councilman in the city of Dundee. I'm part of the committee that Ms. Hoffenberg has been working on, and one of my tasks was to investigate what sort of federal fundings we would have available for. So I believe in your packet you have a response from Congressman Wu that I had sent in. And his indication to me from reading that is that he's open to taking our case and carrying it forward to help us with additional federal funding. I believe that this bill is the first step to get us going down that road. As you can see in one of the statements there, the usual next step is for the highway funding is for Oregon to step forward with an indication of support. And I believe that this bill will show that support. It will provide federal funds. In light of the hour, I think that's enough.
Well, I'm glad that you contacted Congressman Wu. It looks, you know, positive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have communications out to both of our senators, and I'm in corresponding with Vice President Gore under his livability issue. I believe we have a livability problem here, at least for our...
How about the governor? He has his livability thing.
I haven't made that contact yet, but I certainly did.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, it's 5:30. Does anybody want to testify tonight and not come back tomorrow? Who do you call? Do you want to start with him? I know what. That time when everybody, these people are in the building. They're just at other committee hearings. And they have one at 9, but it's not supposed to last very long. So we are scheduled to start at 9, but we probably won't start until 9:30 or 9:45 because I want the other people to hear what's going on. I want to bring them along. And so let's just say 9:45. It's just kind of a delay. If we change it to and post it, we can't have testimony. It has to be a work session. So we're going to leave it as a public hearing. But it really won't be until 9:45. 9:45. So if you know somebody else that isn't here, it will probably be tomorrow. Is that all right with you?
Sure. Is it in this room, too?
Yes. And then, hearing room B. And then they really want us to see if we can work everything out and vote on Monday. So, again, then we'll have a lunch hour. And at 1 o'clock, though, I'm supposed to be in another hearing. But it should be over by 1:30. But I know that Senator George and Ferrioli and they all have another 1 o'clock meeting. So maybe we'll go to 12:30 and then come back at 2. So we'll go. That's all right. Is that all right?
Will we have a chance to spend some more time on the dollar, the spreadsheets tomorrow?
If you want to, but basically what it was is we reached cost neutrality. Did you have a question on it?
I just was curious. I hadn't looked through it all yet.
Okay.
I hadn't seen it before.
You hadn't? Yeah, if you want to. Are you available? You'll be in the building, won't you? Unfortunately. Yeah.
We'll be here. We do have a conference
at 10. All right. Okay. Thanks. All right. Happy. Okay, so now we're adjourned for the night. Thank you. Mm-hmm.